Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. How are y'all today? First off, apologies for the late start. The couple of things in the morning, the timing was a bit off. So everything pushes. So sorry. So let me see, who is new on my left? Anyone who is new on my left? Left side, okay, all season parking. Oh no, you all can see my password. Do you all know what is my password? What is my password? Kong 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 Kong. Oh, wrong, I have changed it. How about my right? Anyone who is new today? I think all season parking. Okay, so what is today's topic? What is today's topic? Today's topic. Yes, what is today's topic? Yes. So today's topic is something that y'all, I think, may hold very dear to heart. Yeah. It is on the, it's an AMA. Precepts and social life. At least one of the thing is something you hold dear. So question is, do you hold dear to your heart precepts or social life? Yeah. So this is one of the topic that was voted up for discussion. A show of hands, how many of you have taken the five precepts? How many of you have not taken the five precepts? So, what are the five precepts? So the five precepts is what you all have read just now. Actually, every week you all take, no? Every week you all recite after me. Yeah, panatipata viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. So every week you actually all take. But maybe you all have not, some of you have not gone through the formal ceremony. So again, I want to ask, is the person who posted this question here today? Okay, at least today the person who posts is here. Yeah, but I think this is relevant to everyone. Yeah, precepts and social life. Is it precepts and social life or precepts versus social life? And precepts and social life. So, what is the relevance? Are they related? Is there a dichotomy between them? Yeah, that means are they separate? Yeah, mutually exclusive, or is there an overlap? How much do they overlap? Yeah, can they coexist? Can you still have a social life while observing the precepts? So first and foremost, what are precepts? Yeah, in general, we say precepts are a set of rules, yeah, or guidelines. Whereby you refrain from certain actions. Yeah. In Buddhism in particular, there's the series, there's the purpose, which is 止恶行善. So in Buddhism, precepts is two-pronged. One is to practice restraint from carrying out evil, unwholesome deeds. On the other hand, it is to carry out good, wholesome deeds that benefit others, avoiding harming others, and in turn, to benefit others. So precepts have this function and purpose. Here it talk about precepts and social life. Yeah, but in Buddhism, precepts is for everybody. Yeah, but for today's discussion, yeah, or sharing, I will limit it to lay people's precepts. Yeah, because by definition, monks don't have social life. So we don't have to consider, will my precepts affect my social life? Yeah. Do monks, in your opinion, do monks and nuns have social life? Huh? How many of you think no? How many of you think yes, monks have social life? Whoa, what kind of social life? yeah, what kind of social life? How come I don't know? So social life again depends on how you define it. That's what I was thinking about also. Yeah, that within the community, as long as you are not alone, yeah, with others, then there is some interaction. Yeah, in that way you can consider that as a social aspect of your life. Yeah, but in the normal context of the word social life, yeah, it usually refers to the social interaction that is usually not what we see of monks and nuns. We usually don't see monks and nuns hang out in pubs, yeah, so, yeah, or go out gai gai. But sometimes some students do meet up with me for tea, yeah. Usually, if because of their time constraint, they can only meet or see me in the evening to consult, then I may choose to meet at my residence or at some centers. Yeah, some of them would be a bit puzzled, like, "Huh, why at night cannot go out?" I'm like, "A bit tricky, I guess." Yeah, so. In a way, monks also have the social part, but yet at the same time, it's a bit not the usual social also. Yeah, in the sense that even when we do meet up with lay people, yeah, it circles around the Dharma. Yeah, seldom do I meet devotees or students purely just for the social aspect. Yeah, very very seldom. Inevitably, somewhere along the discussion, Dharma will surface. Somehow it will surface. You know? But I think if I were to spend any more time for today's session talking about monks and non-social life, it may not be so useful for you. Huh? Yeah. Unless you are interested to join us. Anyone? No, I. So, maybe we should focus on your social life. So precepts. First of all, lay person's precepts. How many of them are there? Yeah, the basic five precepts, which you all have recited, to abstain from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and abstaining from alcohol and intoxicants. Yeah. So, 杀道淫妄酒, five precepts. The first four are fundamentally harmful actions. Yeah. The fifth is not directly harmful, yeah, but it clouds the mind, so laying the seeds for uncontrolled behavior and thoughts, yeah. Observe that also. So then, what about social life? Let's look list it down, and then maybe we can look at how these different precepts may affect your social life. Okay. So the first one is to abstain from killing. Second, to abstain from stealing. Third, sexual misconduct. Fourth is lying. fifth is alcohol. I'll just leave it at alcohol, lah. Because in Singapore, it is illegal to take drugs. Yeah, is it illegal? Last I checked, it's illegal, lah. So I don't think I have to discuss that. So, first precept. Eh, today is supposed to be ask me anything, huh? So, this is just the opening. Then I let you all ask. Otherwise, every time when there's eight, ask me anything, and then I spend the whole session giving talk. Okay, so we have listed the boundary, yeah, drawn out the boundary. Now you all can ask whatever you have about this. Meanwhile, I drink my tea. So what questions do you all have? Yes? What questions do you all have about this topic? Yes, first question.
I think in the Mangala Sutta, right, the first blessing is upon foolish people. So,
yes.
Like, so, I think the understanding of foolish people is people who don't have hopes. So, can we have friends who drink alcohol? Can we have friends who like love to eat live seafood?
Yes. In the Mangala Sutta, it says it's a blessing to avoid foolish people, to associate with the wise. Yeah, in the Dhammapada as well, this is an advice. In many suttas, yeah, the Buddha advised, associate with the wise, yeah, not with the fool. So there are many aspects to what makes a person, what constitutes a foolish person. In brief, it would be those with wrong views, yeah. In the Samadhiti Sutta, on right view, Samadhiti is right view. The first section of the list of right view is about what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. Yeah, usually start with what is unwholesome. Yeah, akusala and kusala. Yeah, unwholesome and wholesome. And they are virtually opposite of each other. So that would be the 10 unwholesome deeds versus the 10 wholesome deeds. So those who disagree with this, then is considered to be foolish for a start. Yeah. First of all is the view, and then from that it translates to the action, yeah, who act according to those views. And lastly, who think that the result is good. So if we just pick one example, okay, killing. So killing is constant act. I think most will agree that killing human beings is not wholesome. Yeah, but not everybody agree to the scope. Yeah, meaning maybe we may agree that killing human beings is not good, but maybe non-human beings is okay. So in that sense, that is considered to be a wrong view. Yeah. Why? Because, so here it's not simply because, oh, they don't agree with us, so we say it's wrong. But based on what the Buddha in to the extent whatsoever that a person were to do harmful acts towards others, yeah, up to killing, yeah, whether it's physically harming a person or any living being, any sentient being, up to ending the sentient being's life, it produces a painful result. So on that basis, we say, okay, those who don't agree with this must be agreeing with the opposite, yeah, which is that killing is wholesome. Killing is to be done. And further, the person may act upon that. Yeah. And if a person acts in this way, then in a way, by the Dhamma definition, such a person is foolish. And then to think that killing produces good results. So we can, in a way, classify in terms of the view, the actions, and the results. Yeah. So, that being said, does it mean that we have to cut off our ties with everybody who is foolish? Yeah. So, in the teachings, it says, don't associate with the fools. Yeah. So, is that equal to not having friends who are foolish? In my opinion, you have to ask yourself this simple question. Are you someone who is easily affected by others? Mm? Chinese have a saying, 近朱者赤, 近墨者黑. Yeah. For our Western friend, the 近朱者赤, 近墨者黑 is a Chinese idiom. Yeah. There are two main concepts here. Yeah. It's actually an analogy, yeah, or a metaphor. So, 朱 and 赤, 朱砂, which is the reddish color, pigment, like a cream kind of thing, yeah. And it's usually used for seal, yeah. It's Chinese calligraphy usually have a seal, yeah, the mark, and that seal is usually red in color, yeah. And so you take the seal, you press into this kind of paste-like thing, and then it get marked with red color, yeah. So, 静珠, yeah, you go near to it, yeah, then you get tainted with red color. Yeah. 静墨则黑, 墨 is ink, yeah. So traditionally Chinese ink is always black, yeah. So black versus red. Yeah. So it's saying if you go towards you, if you're near to something, you get affected, colored by it. And in the Chinese idiom, we use this to represent wholesome versus unwholesome. No? Yeah. So for most people, it's like that. So for most people, if you keep on associating with people who think that killing is okay, yeah, and then maybe stealing, you know, when we think about stealing, we may think, who would actually steal things? You think, I have such friends, man. Cannot be, what? Yeah. But let me tell you, long time ago, I had this friend. When I visited this country that she's in, and then she shared with me, she learned from the locals how to beat the train system. Yeah, usually for trains, you know, you have to buy a ticket and then, you know, like tap in or whatever. So she shared with me that, oh, there's a way that you don't have to pay full fare, you know, and then you can just go in. When she shared that with me, yeah, a part of me, maybe some people may say that I'm very judgmental, but when she shared that with me, I was a bit disgusted. Yeah. At that point in time, I was still a layperson, yeah. And the moment she shared that with me, in my mind, there was just this, like, okay, in that case, I can only be a friend up to this point. I'm still her friend, you know. I don't say, oh, you cannot be my friend. But I in my mind, there's this mindset that, okay, nothing else beyond a normal friendship can exist. I cannot go beyond a normal friendship with such a person. Yeah. It was just a very spontaneous thing. And in fact, it changed the way I look at her. Yeah. Well, maybe, as I said, some may feel that I'm very judgmental. Huh? Yeah. I don't say that she must not be like that, but I say, well, if you are like that, our mindset is a bit different. Yeah, a bit different. But I think for many people, among friends, they'll think, wow, it's so nice, huh? You teach me how to save money, you know? Ah. So sometimes when we look at the precepts, oftentimes the transgression is the minor infraction, which most people find acceptable, and may even delight in it, and may even feel, wow, my friend's so smart, no? Wow, I never think before that you can do this. Huh? Why am I so stupid to pay full fare all these years? And you may even be grateful to this person. Yeah. So, with regards to friendship, yeah, we have to ask ourselves, are we easily affected by others? Do we succumb to peer pressure? If one friend, two friends, three friends, if most of our friends behave in a certain way, do we simply find ourselves pressured to conform to the common behavior? Or are we someone who is, are we a person who is able to stand our ground? If we can, then no problem. Yeah, no problem. Because even the Buddha himself, not that he go and socialize with people, but he welcomed anyone who come and see him to ask questions. Even courtesan, yeah? Even kings and princes who wage war. Yeah? He don't say, oh, you conduct such activities, don't come and see me. Yeah? He say, it's okay, come, no problem. Yeah? Even those with wrong views, isn't it? Yeah? But that's on the basis that because he has already established right view, it's no issue. He's able to share with them what is right view. But he don't force them to have right view also. Why did the Buddha, in that case, why did the Buddha advise his disciples to associate with the wise, not with the fools? Because for most people, easily influenced by people. Yeah, or at least pressured. Yeah, so if you find yourself easily pressured, then maybe you have to, first of all, ask yourself, do you agree with the precepts? Yeah, if you agree, then you may want to keep your association to a lower degree, one. Two, build up your confidence in the precepts, in the benefits of the precepts. Then, even when you interact with people who act contrary to the precepts, you're able to hold your ground. Then no issue. Like I had friends who drinks. Yeah? I mean in the past. Yeah? And when we meet, they will always order drinks. And sometimes after a meal, they will hang out in a pub. I also go. Yeah, in the past. Not now. I don't go pub now. You know, in case you're like, wow, really happening, Sifu got social life. No, I don't go to pubs. But for that matter, for myself, in the past, I don't have a yearning to go to pubs. I go only because they go. Yeah. So I always enjoy the $12 Coke. Yeah. And in fact, I will split the bill with them. Yeah. Of course, now I think about it, why should I be splitting? I'm paying for that drink. Yeah. But I never had to drink with them. Yeah. Maybe we can also say that because my friends are understanding, they don't force me. Yeah. But I would think even if they try to encourage me, I'll say, well, it's okay, you can, you know. In fact, some of the among the group of friends, at some point there were some females who joined us, yeah. They're friends of friends. And in fact, it is the girls who were trying to get me to drink. Quite funny. My guy friends, they have no interest to get me to drink. It's the girls who want me to drink. Yeah. Chinese have a saying, 借酒行凶. Yeah. But for me, I told them my little story of how when I was in NS, I ever got a bit drunk. Yeah, and that settled it. Yeah. For more information, see me after this. Yeah, to me, it boils down to what is your attitude towards the precepts, first and foremost. Next question. Next question. Yes.
Okay, so carry on from his question, no, because at least from my viewpoint, I don't know if like being a lone ranger is okay, because everyone around me keeps saying that they need help. You must come and socialize with more people. Don't like just be like doing your own stuff. But for me, in my past 20 years of life, I keep on saying that my interests and other people's interests are too far apart already. So like, even my army colleagues now, even my clique, we haven't really meet up a lot. Then like, so I want to know a few questions. Like, the basis of social life is it that must have a common interest? Then number two is like, don't ranger okay or not?
Okay. So let me answer the second question first. Is it okay to be a lone ranger? Strictly speaking, nothing wrong. But even more importantly, is whether you are a lone ranger by choice or not. Meaning, deep down inside, do you wish to be a lone ranger? Before you answer, so let me explain. By lone ranger, I assume that it means to do things on your own. Okay? So there are those who do things on their own by choice. Yeah, because they prefer to just do things on their own, lesser of a hassle. You don't have to wait for others to come. You don't have to wait until everybody can do it, then you do it. Yeah, so there are benefits to being a lone ranger. Yeah, but not everybody want that as well. There are those who want that and they do that. And they don't like company. There are also those who like to be alone, but they don't mind company. There are those who don't want to be a lone ranger, but end up being a lone ranger. Okay? And there are those who don't want to be a lone ranger, and so they want company. And when there's company, they're happy. Yeah? So there are a combination of different aspects. Okay? You have to ask yourself, are you someone who is a lone ranger by choice?
No.
So you do want to socialize with people. You do want to have friends.
Yes.
Okay. So, for the past 10 over years, when there are some students who actually admire my Facebook account, because some of them say, "Wow, Shifu, you have a lot of friends." At that point in time, it was like 2,000-3,000 person. By now, it's 4,900 over. Yeah, and only because I removed some of them, because some of them have suspended their own account or deactivated, but never unfriend me, so I unfriend them. The purpose is because there are new classes and new students who want to friend me, but they cannot friend me because I hit the limit. So some students profile and they see the 4,900 over friends, they're like, wow, how I wish I have so much friends. Actually, nothing to be proud of. What I share with them is, they ask me, "Shifu, how can I have more friends like you?" Yeah, first of all, Facebook friends are not necessarily friend. They are just a connection. Secondly, even more importantly, this is what I share with many people. If you want to be friends with others, you must first learn to be happy and at ease by yourself, with yourself. Let me write that down for you. How come today's writing looks a bit strange? A bit like... Okay, let me just... Okay. So, to be happy and at ease. With ourselves and by ourselves. To me, this is rather important. Yeah, to be happy and at ease with ourselves and by ourselves. For most students, when they hear this, they are initially a bit perplexed. Like, Sifu, you don't seem to understand my question. I'm trying to have more friends. Then you ask me to be happy and at ease by myself. Yeah. So why do I suggest this? I suggest this because if we think of our friends in terms of someone who can give me happiness, then that relationship is tenable. It's not tenable. It is from the ground up based on a relationship of need. Yeah, based on the basis of need. Oh, I need my friend. I mean, of course, you know, it's okay, right, to need our friend. But if the sole purpose of that friendship is I need something from them, in my opinion, as far as I observe, may not be the most healthy. Yeah. Unconsciously, the way we interact with others, they will start to feel that vibe, that neediness. Yeah. And if the friendship is built up solely based on what the person can give you, then it's a one-sided relationship. Friendship shouldn't simply be, oh, they give us happiness. Isn't it? Yeah. There can be this aspect, but if it's purely just about finding people to give you happiness, then it's like looking for Grab, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking for a hawker center. Yeah. And that's why when you go to eat at a hawker center, you know, the feeling is different from when you are with your friends. But yet, at the same time, if you repeatedly eat at a certain hawker stall, after a while, you also start to build up a friendship, you know? Yeah? Why? Because from the stall owner's point of view, hey, you have a lot of choice, no? How come this guy always choose to eat my place? Yeah? Then it goes beyond just basic needs. Yeah, so even for our so-called relationship with a hawker stall, yeah, it can transcend the very transactional nature and become a form of a friendship. Yeah, so of course we should expect more in a normal friendship. It shouldn't just be a transaction where I need something from this person, I need happiness from this person. And to do that, we need to be happy and at ease with ourselves first. What I observe over the years is a very strange thing. It's not very intuitive. But the truth is, if we learn to be happy and at ease with ourselves, others will find us to be perhaps, how should I put it? You may find others gravitating towards you. Because you ask yourself, if you meet 10 person, 5 of them are not happy by themselves. 5 of them at least appear happy by themselves. Who are you more likely to choose if you can choose who to be friends? Would you like to choose the first 5 or the latter 5? Quite naturally, right? Because they look pretty happy. Yeah, you may unconsciously or consciously want to know what makes them so happy, you know? Yeah. Who wants to meet with friends who every time when you meet them and then the moment they open their mouth, you ask them, how's things going? Aiyah, sian lah. You know, every single time you meet them, aiyah, sian lah, you know, lousy lah, horrible lah, my boss lah, my wife lah, my son lah, my daughter lah, my husband. You know, if the person is, the only thing that comes out of their mouth is complaint, negativity, you know, and a general sense of dread, there's only that many times you find yourself meeting that friend, you know. Mm. Now, granted, we all go through ups and downs in life, yeah. So, while such a person would not be so attractive as a friend, potential friend, at the same time, we should be a friend to others, because sometimes people have downtime, and we should, as a friend, be there for them. And so if we only seek friendship to be happy ourselves, then we may not be a very good friend to others, you know. Ah. Because we're only seeking people happy faces, people to give us happiness. Then people will ask, hey, you only look for me to be happy leh. But when I'm down, you're not there for me. Is that a real friend? No, isn't it? So if we seek friendship, we should learn what true friendship is and be a true friend to others. Yeah. And to begin with, be a friend to yourself. To be happy with yourself, by yourself. To be at ease. Yeah. Meaning, to be at ease with ourselves would mean that you are comfortable with who you are. Now, comfort level is different from complacency. Comfortable means that you are in full knowledge of your strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. Whether you are, and that includes your physical features, your internal aspects of yourself, that you know fully where you are, and you are okay with that. You may have aspirations for changing yourself, but it's coming from a wholesome direction where you seek growth, yeah, to better yourself, and not from an angle of shame, like, oh, I'm so shameful that I'm this or that. Unless, of course, if it's unwholesomeness, you should be ashamed of unwholesomeness if there is unwholesomeness. Okay? Yeah. So, the second part, Lone Ranger, yeah. There's nothing wrong with being a Lone Ranger. But if you find yourself that you're not a Lone Ranger by choice, then you may find yourself oftentimes feeling down.
Then how?
Yeah. Okay, that answers the question. Yeah. I've ever shared with one student, learn to take interest in others. Some students tell me, how come Shifu, how come nobody take interest in what I do? Well, maybe you should not wait for people to take interest in you. Take interest in what people are doing. Yeah? Take interest in other people's life. Don't spend so much time just focusing on your life. Oh, my life, like this, like that. How come nobody come and see me? Look. Don't do that. If you are doing that, don't do that. I don't know whether you are doing that. Still trying. It's okay. Still trying.
Auto baby steps, lah. So I'm a bit impatient right now. Because I'm desperate, lah.
Desperate, lah.
For friendship, lah.
For friendship.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, are you looking for a particular kind of friendship?
you know me very well. You know me too well.
Yeah, that's why I'm Shifu. I think for anybody, it's quite natural that we all seek that a particular kind of friendship. Yeah. When I was your age, I also seek a particular kind of friendship. Yeah. And I'll tell you, you are 18 years old, 19 years old?
20.
Yeah. Around that age, I can imagine. Yeah. A lot of young boys and young girls, there's just this very, I don't know, that kind of wish to have someone. But for me, it's a bit weird. I'm the weird one. You're normal, actually. I'm the weird one. Because for me, when I do have a relationship, I always have this question. Do I need a girlfriend? Why do I need a girlfriend? Yeah. So I was never, like most people, they are not at ease if they don't have a partner. For me, when I do have a girlfriend, I'm not at ease. Very strangely. Yeah, so don't worry, you're normal. Yeah, you're normal. It's normal to have that wish for a particular kind of friendship. But I would suggest another way of looking at this. Before you think about having that kind of particular kind of friendship, you may want to have a feel of normal friendship with others first. Platonic friendship for a start. Don't just jump straight into wanting to have the kind of amorous, romantic relationship with others. Because the amorous, romantic relationship, actually, within it is the platonic friendship as well. Because friendship is very broad. Yeah? Amorous relationship is a very specific type with certain features that is above platonic friendship. But inside, it contains the platonic part also. So if we don't develop the platonic relationship or friendship with others, and we just jump straight into romantic relationship, we may actually be caught up in the romantic, in the romance, but not know the true love that should be inside. So build up your friendship with others first. Okay? What was the first question again?
The basis of social life, the basis of how to form friendship with the rest. Is it based on common interest?
Well, okay, I seem to have answered that already as well. Yeah. And yes, the short answer to your question would be yes, for many people, the common interest, either common interest or shared experiences. Yeah. So that's why for many people, their secondary school and JC friends, usually secondary school friends, are very close because you spend 4 years at the formative part of your life. Yeah. So there's that shared experience. Yeah. That binds you together. But I personally have friends beyond my childhood days, even at work, with whom I build up a very, very strong friendship up to this date. Yeah, know them for 10 over years. So it is not always that your friendship must be with those who have common interests, and not necessarily only with those who have shared experiences in the childhood years. Yeah, can be older as well. Yeah, but having common interests is a helpful start. I once watched a short YouTube clip, I think, and it says, the best way to make friends is to ask people and talk to them about them. Now, be careful. If you're not careful, this can become manipulative. Where you just ask to make them feel good so that they talk to you. Yeah. But it's up to us whether you want to be genuine about it. And I would, of course, recommend for anyone to be genuine about their interests. Yeah, in them, yeah, in the friends. Yeah, people like to talk about themselves. This is something natural. Yeah, this is something natural. So, if you want to build up friendship, interest is one. Yeah, common interest, but even more important is to have interest in people. Then that will help you. Okay. Next question. Yes.
Sifu, in regards to lying.
To what?
In regards to the five precepts, lying.
Lying, okay.
Yes. So sometimes we do tell white lies to meet others' expectations because they may not have the wisdom or the understanding on the whole situation. For example, the wife and the mother-in-law. So, if a guy is stuck in the middle, and both the wife and the mother-in-law want both the guy to understand, so sometimes the guy may have to lie on both sides to pacify both sides, because if he's going to tell them the truth, either of them may not accept it, and the situation may get worse. So in this instance, how do we react to lying, and not just in terms of family life, in terms of work as well, sometimes we do have to tell white lies to meet the expectations of the clients first. Maybe we have not reached the expectation and they are expecting something from us, then we have to tell a white lie so that we can achieve it at a later stage of life. So in that aspect, if we choose to tell the truth, they may not be able to accept it and it may jeopardize our work in that aspect. So
okay,
how do we be truthful to everyone where not everyone can accept the hard truth?
Yes. As they say, the cold hard truth is difficult to swallow. Yeah. Easier to swallow with a pinch of lie. Let me address the second part first. There's a difference between lying about certain services or products that is not there yet versus giving assurance that you are working on it to achieve those requirements. Like, for example, your current product or service offering may be ABC, but they need ABCDE. So you are lacking in DE. Many times it's about positioning. Yeah, like if you tell your clients, your clients ask, I have ABCDE, but you know clearly that it's only ABC. You can, number one, just tell them, no, we only do ABC. I mean, if you say no, we only do ABC, then you're shortchanging yourself and them also, actually. You're telling the truth, but you're putting it across as though it is immutable. You cannot change it. You know, take it or leave it. Then, of course, they're going to leave it all. Right? You can also, number two, lie about it. ABC, do you say ABCDE? Can, no problem, man. Can. We already do it. Been doing it for 10 years. Yeah? You know, the joke is, like now we talk about cloud services, right? And then there are people who will oversell and say, we have 30 years of experience. Oh, 30 years ago, there's no cloud. Yeah? So don't oversell. So this is number two. Number three is, if the person asks for something that is beyond your current scope, yeah, of course, you have to me, you have to be open and outright that you don't have it yet, yeah? But the key thing is how you position it. You can also say, well, your requirements A, B, C, D, E, yeah, we currently have A, B, C, but I think the D, E is something crucial, yeah, for your business, and what I can do for you is, I'm going to work out with our backend. Yeah, we don't want to just give you empty promises. Be upfront with them. We don't want to give you empty promises. Anyone can just tell you, can, and in the end, cannot. Yeah? So we'd rather be upfront with you. But what I'm going to do is, bring this back and discuss with my tech guys and see whether we can come up with something. Yeah? And before we let you commit to it, we're going to work out a timeline, a roadmap, and see what really works in reality. Yeah, I think, what do you all think? If your vendor tells you that, would you not be comfortable, right? And unfortunately, if the timeline doesn't fit that timeline, then maybe it's a deal that you should lose. You know, then get them into trouble. Yeah, and I tell you, clients will really appreciate you for being honest about it. And they will, in future, you'll be the first one they want to give a go at it. Because they know that you will not bullshit them. So as far as work is concerned, it's pretty straightforward to me. Yeah. Because I myself, when I was in the field, I've ever told clients before, well, you don't really need this exchange server. It's overkill for you. Yeah, you just need something lighter. Yeah. I've told clients before. Yeah. And they appreciate it. The downside is, then you are stuck with them for life. They'll keep coming back to you. If that's a downside for you. Now, the more interesting thing is the mother-in-law and wife, isn't it? Yes?
So, in regards to the work, can I give you a scenario?
Okay.
For example, you're representing the company and the vendor is supposed to do a delivery and due to some payment issues on your company, they are unable to deliver on time.
So the payment?
Yes. So, to protect your company interest, you've got to tell the white lie that, oh, there's some accidents during the delivery, so there's a delay that caused to it. But how do you actually tell the client that it's due to payment issues?
Wait, is it with the client or vendor? If it's with the vendor, you are paying. You're paying. If client, they are paying you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Which one?
Okay. So.
Is it?
With a. Both ways.
Huh?
So you are like the middleman.
Oh, so you are the middleman. So upstream, downstream, downstream with the vendor, with the vendor, or client, upstream with the vendor. And what's the problem again?
Okay, the problem is that sometimes due to payment issues on your part to the vendors,
oh,
it
so
delayed in the delivery.
Ah, okay. So because you are like the main con, and you somehow didn't pass the payment down to your vendor, so that's why the vendor didn't deliver the products to the client.
Yes, and in their aspects, we can't really tell the client the truth about it because it actually damaged the company's reputation, the one that you're working for. So
I got a feeling it's already damaged. Yeah, the moment you don't deliver, you have damaged it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still within the project timeline, just that there's some delays on the actual day itself.
Oh, so you have not... So... If you have delay, that means you have delay. You know, when you say delay, it means that you have missed the timeline.
Okay.
So is it within or?
It's still within the timeline, just that.
The overall timeline.
Yes, overall timeline.
It's just that some of the milestones are missed.
Yes. Yes, but and as clients, they have expectations, you know, like.
Of course.
Yes. So manage their expectations.
Well.
Without lying.
So let me put on my consulting hat. The first thing is communication, yeah? Expectation management. Through timely communication. At the first possible time, you should inform your client of any possible delays. Yeah? Never hide the fact that there will be delay. The earlier you tell them, the more likely they are to be okay with it. Yeah? What's worse than delay is not having information about the delay. Yeah? As to why there is a delay, it depends on your relationship with a client. If your relationship with your client is good, we ever have situation where we actually tell the client, people on the ground, very directly that, okay, this is the actual thing, but I cannot tell you officially, so you didn't hear from me officially, this conversation didn't happen. You know, in the industry, a common phrase is, we didn't have this conversation. Yeah. And many times we find that whether it's client or vendors, at the end of the day, we all know we're just working for someone, you know. And most people, they are understandable. But if you keep information from them and they find out after that, then they are less likely to work towards your advantage. Yeah. Many times I find that if you are being open with them and let them know your predicament, yeah, and also let them know what you are doing to resolve the issue, they are more likely to work with you to manage the crisis. Yeah, I feel that is more often than not the best approach forward. Mm. So if you are being transparent with your client, to do that it takes a bit of trust. Yeah, but trust is not overnight, and you cannot establish trust only when there is crisis. A bit too late for that. Trust must be built up from the first day. Yeah, then when there's crisis, you have that trust to fall back on. Trust about what? Trust from your client that you are doing in their interest. Then when you tell them about what hiccup there is, they're more likely to look at it and say, well, despite this happening, I trust that you're going to do your best to make it work anyway. Then it shouldn't be an issue. Huh? Yes. Okay. First question, yes, about the in-laws. May not be just mother-in-law. Can be father-in-law, can be mother-in-law. In-laws and wife. Fortunately or unfortunately, I haven't had direct experience with that. Yeah, but I've shared in class before about how I told my mom that I ever told her that in future, back then, that if ever I have I get married, that she should not have the wrong idea. Oh, that my son all the while is very, you know, close to heart, listens to me, and now only because getting married, then don't listen to me. Yeah, I told my mom before, some 20 over years ago. Yeah. My approach is oftentimes, I prefer to do something, which is get both parties involved to sit down and have a talk. Yeah. So far, in almost all the in-laws and wife-husband-related matters, right, I don't understand one thing. One family, but you must have multiple meetings. You know? Even in the corporate world, we say, you know, get everybody to the war room and trash it up. But then at home, here have one meeting, there have one meeting. Then offline, online, you know, all kind of meeting. Yeah. I feel that many times when you have separate discussion, then there's a potential for distrust about your word versus my word. Yeah, so I oftentimes like people to say, come together, okay, what's the issue? Yeah. The trouble is, not everybody is comfortable with that. I remember when I was in Scouts in secondary school, I had to deal with my mother. I had wanted to give training to the Sec 1, Sec 2s. I was a patrol leader. So I was, I think, in Sec 3. So one of the boys, you know, was quite recently told me, I have told my mother. My mother said she wants to see you. So usually when that happens, right, even the teachers will say, it's okay, lah. You know, I think we can. You know, even teachers will just try to back off. Not to mention just secondary school, 3 kids. But for me, I say, okay, when? And then he's like, okay. So he went to arrange, and I brought the whole patrol to his house. Yeah. I was the patrol leader. I brought the whole patrol, went to his house, tanpan ma. Yeah. So I sat down, and then I talked to the mother. Yeah. And at the end of, you know, half an hour or 45 minutes or so, I managed to convince the mother that, yeah, all the training is needed. And so in the end, the mother said, okay, my son, leave it to you. So even when I was in secondary school, I was ready to meet parents. So I like to think that even if I had gone down the other path and gotten married, my approach would be, okay, wife, mother or wife with mother-in-law, you all have, usually it's not wife with mother-in-law, it's wife with your mother, because for the guy, for the girls will be husband with your own mother also, yeah, which is the in-law of the spouse. I presume when you say in-law, it's the in-law to your spouse, which is your own mother. For me, it'll be very simple. Any issue, come sit down. What happened on that day? Okay, wait, stop, one person at a time. Okay, hang on, let me write it down. Yes? Yeah, this is what I will do. Yeah, because you know what? People don't remember what they say. Even just seconds after they say it, they will look at you and, no, I didn't say that. I said, well, I wrote it down. And sometimes when people are really like, you know, like, chew their words, I'm like, let me record it down. But people are not comfortable doing that. Yeah. Nor are they comfortable to have that done to them. Yeah, so I'm ready for people to feel uncomfortable because I feel that if we have an open discussion, usually things become clearer. Oftentimes, the end result is that their perception is but their perception, and it's oftentimes colored and layered with a lot of their preconception. Yeah. What I found is that many times when we have an open heart-to-heart talk, then it becomes clearer what is really troubling them. Sometimes you don't get down to that, but at least you get them to realize that they are not comfortable to talk about it at the first place. Yeah. I have counseled a few students where certain things happen, and somehow something happened to wife, husband don't know. And then I ask, so did you tell your husband? No, I didn't tell him. Why? Because my mother-in-law said cannot tell him. So in many cases, I find a dichotomy in people. Yeah, this contradiction in people. On one hand, they are upset enough to feel upset and to blow up. But they are not upset enough to say, go against the in-laws totally. You know, so it's selective reasoning, you know. Yeah. If you want to be a nice person, as I always tell people, be nice all the way. If you want to be nasty all the way. Don't be nasty, yeah. But if you choose to be nasty, just be nasty all the way. Don't be half nasty, half nice. Then very troublesome. Yeah. Like if you have issue with in-laws, then in no part of your consideration should you have to consider what your in-laws think, ma? But I tell you, a lot of times, while on one hand they say in-law like this, like that, but on the other hand, certain some of the decisions seem to hinge on that in-law's preferences. Yeah. I still can't wrap my head around how people can, you know, have something happen but never tell their spouse about it. And how sometimes when individuals tell their spouse can say, it's okay, ma. And so this is the other part of it. If we are on the receiving end of someone's grouses, never look at the situation based on your own standard. Because you never experience it, so your standard is never correct. You know, I often hear people say, no, I think it's okay. But yeah, you can say that now because you are hearing about it. You are not the one who is receiving it. Yeah. And even if you are okay with it, doesn't mean it's okay. Like. You have to assess it based on that person's stand. So for example, let me see. What is one example that would be? If let's say, I don't know, daughter and your mother, yeah, and then your wife tell you, let's say, are you married? No. Yeah, but let's say your wife tell you, your mother, oh, that day pass a certain remark. What remark? She said that, you know, as a wife, yeah, you should come back earlier and cook. Yeah, how come your husband is still washing the dishes? You should be washing the dishes. You know, just as an example, I don't know whether people are still like that nowadays. Yeah. If we are on the receiving end, that means we hear about this, we can choose to say, why, what's wrong with that? Yeah. Well, apparently there must be something wrong with that, right? Otherwise, why should your wife tell you about it? Yeah. But what I find is that oftentimes, we just assess it based on our own standard. Yeah. And we say, no, I think if someone tell me that, I'm okay. What? Just because it's okay for us doesn't mean it must be okay for others. Well. If the person feel hurt, what do you want to do? You can always choose to say, well, that's your problem. Well, why do you want to feel hurt? You just say this kind of reply once or twice, right? The third time it happened, your wife will not be telling you the problem anymore. Your wife will be telling somebody else. And you better pray that it's her best friend who is a girl. Because before you know it, your wife will be telling some colleague or some friend. And then you just need one good friend to say, ayo, how come like that, huh?
wow,
then your wife will feel affirmed, or your husband will feel affirmed. And next thing you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry thing also tell that person. Then a few years later, you wonder, how come my wife don't tell me anything? It starts off with something so benign, you know. Yeah, so thank you for the question. Yeah, because it's not simply about resolving the problem, but oftentimes it's about taking interest in people, really caring for them. And caring for them is not simply about buying flowers, like bring them to a holiday or whatever. It's when they, you know, share a view, certain grouses that they are experiencing, to empathize how they feel. It doesn't mean you must agree with them. As I said, you may not think it's a problem. Yeah. And sometimes I tell people, well, if you want to ask me personally, I'm going to take it as an issue. Yeah. And you have no idea how affirming that is. Important thing is, you are not saying it just to affirm them, just to make them feel good. But you genuinely have to feel that way. Yeah. To me, that's about caring. That's about having empathy, having compassion for their suffering. Then the question is, depending on the situation, the actual circumstances, to also understand where the mother is coming from. Yeah. So those who come to me for counseling will know, everybody gets scolded. Usually when we go and we go and confide in people, unconsciously or consciously, we have this wish for people to side with us, right? Yeah. Otherwise, why you go and look for that person, right? Quite naturally. So, what they don't expect is for me to both empathize and also consider both situations, and often than not, and more often than not, I will also highlight the gap in both sides. Yeah, I like to think that can help both sides grow. Yeah, I'm looking at it from a place of growth, yeah, than simply pointing out who is right and wrong. I hope that can help. And if you do that, then you don't have to lie also. Now, this is a very broad topic. This is about life. Yeah. And I don't think this is the last we will hear of this topic. I hope to revisit this. And perhaps not just about precepts and social life, but precepts in our life. Yeah. How do we look at precepts not as restrictions in our life, but how can we use precepts to empower us to really care for others? Because precepts is actually about that. Precepts is about restraining ourselves so that we can truly care for others without harming them. Then perhaps we can, if we explore and live precepts as part of our life, then it is no longer a separate thing, yeah, but intertwined. The very fabrics of our interaction, our relationship with others, that goes beyond the surface. Yeah? That it goes beyond mere lip service, but truly meaningful relationships. Okay? Mm.
愿消三障诸烦恼 愿达智慧真明了 普愿罪障悉消除 世世常行菩萨道 阿弥陀佛 起立